1995. I'm Kathy Adams, interviewing John B. Nesbitt, lifetime resident of Jacksonville, Alabama, former mayor.
Good morning, Kathy. Nice to see you this morning. I think you have some questions and comments which you'd like to hear from me. Please, let's go ahead.
Let's start out with your earliest childhood memories of Jacksonville.
Kathy, I was born in Jacksonville in 1931. We're living now in the house that I was born in. It was built by my grandfather in 1890. Of course, my early memories were with my family and church and school and neighborhood people in the neighborhood. Of course, Jacksonville was a small, very small town then. I imagine the population was less than 2,000 people. It was the home of Jacksonville State Normal School, or State Normal School at that time, which was the primary occupation in the town. There was a Union Yarn Mill here, which employed many people. But it was primarily a college town back in even those days. What else do you want me to talk about now?
Well, I would like for you to tell us how the church functioned in your life as you were growing up and as an adult.
We were members of the First Presbyterian Church in Jacksonville. Of course, the church functioned as a major source of entertainment, as a place of social activities. Mother and Daddy were both active in the church. Daddy was a member of the session of the Presbyterian Church, one of the elders. Mother taught Sunday school for many, many years, and Daddy sang in the choir. As we came along, we, of course, were just automatically members of the church. We came up in the church, went to church every Sunday. Our church was small in those days, and we did not have a regular preacher. In fact, we only had church services the first and third and fifth Sundays. And our preacher here in those days went to Piedmont to preach in the second and fourth Sundays. In the afternoons, he preached in the little neighborhood church called Salem, halfway between Jacksonville and Piedmont, and then Carmel, which is above Piedmont. So the church played a pretty active role in our part in my life in those days.
Did you serve in World War II?
Kathy, I am not a veteran. I was too young for World War II, and as the Korean War came along, I was a college student. And after the Korean War, Dorothy and I got married in 1956, so I sort of missed the military duty all through my life. The only military experience I've had was I took ROTC at the Reserve Officer Training Corps at Davidson, North Carolina, for 2 years, and as I volunteered as a advanced student in those days, they wouldn't let me take advance because of my eyeglasses. I was very nearsighted, and they wouldn't enroll me in those days.
During World War II, when you were still here in town, how do you remember the town as being affected by wartime?
The military played a very big part in our lives in those days because of the proximity of Fort McClellan, which was a major infantry base in those days. And those families came into town, the families, men brought their families, their wives and children. They had a very limited place for them to live. So they lived out in the community, everywhere they could. The people in the community literally converted chicken houses to tenant houses to people who have a place to live. I remember in my own house, we had the upstairs of this house rented out as a separate apartment up there, and we always had it rented out to military families. We got to know some mighty fine military people that way, and we've kept up with them all these years. They influenced our church, they influenced our community. The military government in those days built the USO building here next door to our home in the next block, which was quite an entertainment center for the town and the military in those days. So that was quite a building, a big frame building with an auditorium. In fact, after World War II, the center was turned over to the town. Unfortunately, by 1950, it burned down. So since 1950, we have not had that center, but up until that time, it was a major source of social activities in the community. I remember our senior high play was given in that building. Many of the debates between the literary societies at the university were held in that building, in the auditorium of that building. There used to be a skating rink in there. There used to hold dances. Civic clubs used to meet. There used to be a local restaurant in there. So the military played a tremendous part in our town in World War II, and still does today.
Do you remember during the 50s and 60s any civil rights actions that were going on in Jacksonville?
Our small community has always had a good relationship with the races. The town has always been integrated as far as living conditions. We've had blacks living in the white community areas ever since I was a kid. The Fox family, the Reed family, the Williams family, intermixed many parts of the town. The Fox family lived on Plum Road. The Reed family lived down on West Crawford Street, West Van Street. Various other families lived around in the community. The Williams family lived down on West Francis. So, you know, we really had no problem. Our population was very small. Black population to white. I think we had less than 10%. Now, we did have two schools. Whites and the blacks went to separate schools, but that was done away with very easily. Back in the 60s, I believe, they just simply combined them and did away with the Eastwood School. And the principal of the Eastwood School was made the assistant principal of the high school, Johnny Brown, and they took the teachers in, disintegrated them, and we had no problem that I know of in the local school. That's been the case ever since.
I know the Reed family that you spoke of started from an ex-slave in the pre-Civil War days. Did the Fox family start that way also?
I'm not sure about the Fox family, but the Fox family were farmers. They ran we'd call it their taxi service, bringing people back and forth from the railroads. They had a wagon, a dray, they call it, and they brought people back and forth from the railroad up to town to the hotel. They were educators, came in here as teachers, worked in the school system. The Odom family came here that way. Councilman Theodore Fox's father was ran the Texas service type thing, and of course he was a teacher and a preacher. Councilman Fox was. The Reed family started off and had a Reed shoe shop for many years in town, fixed my family's shoes for many, many years. Real fine folks. Contributed much to our community.
I understand that it was the oldest business here in Jacksonville, and that when the second Reed died, all of the merchants on the square closed up for the funeral. Do you remember? That
is probably correct. I knew old Gene Reed, we call it, young Gene, and then the family and his wife. I'm sure that's correct if somebody said that. I'm not knowledgeable that happened, but I'm sure it was.
What has been the effect of affirmative action in Jacksonville? Have you noticed an effect on workers here at that?
I have not seen any noticeable effect. We've never discriminated, as far as I know, from my side, my viewpoint on people. A person was able to do a job, they were hired and employed this job. Electricians, carpenters. We have very few professional black people in town. We don't have any lawyers. We have a doctor now. Dr. Johnny Brown is an old nose. Eyes, what, throat man, ears, nose and eyes, and throat man, I get it right in a minute. He was Johnny Brown's son, who was the principal of the school, Eastwood School for many years. There may be some cases, obviously some of the blacks may feel like there's some discrimination, but I can't recall anything. There's been very little demonstrations, very little displays of any kind of demonstration. I think there's one time at the hospital, some group felt like the hospital people were being discriminated, but that was resolved pretty rapidly. We had Mr. Fox elected to the city council many years ago, and most of the blacks are represented on all our boards and hospital boards and school boards over the years. So as far as discrimination was concerned, I think we had very little.
How did the voting law affect the town? Did there be change in voting when the laws became easier for more people to get out and vote? Did you notice a rise in voting?
Kathy, I don't feel like there was any discrimination in voting. Everybody, to my knowledge, anybody who wanted to vote, registered to vote and voted. I mean, in my lifetime, nobody was threatened with their life if they voted. I don't know of any case of that happened.
During the 1960s, do you recall any violence in the town due to Vietnam War protest or drug use?
No, not that I remember. There may have been small instances, but I don't remember anything.
Do you remember any JSU students maybe getting in on this type of demonstration?
No, not really. Maybe it's a letter to the editor of the newspaper, but it's awful. But I never felt like there was any kind of demonstration going on.
Well, I understand that back in the 1970s, a group of students from JSU tried to get involved in city affairs and demanded representation, or at least this is what the newspapers wanted people to think. Do you recall that incident?
At one time, the students got a parade up and came to the city hall. The students constantly involving in various issues over the life of the community. And every two or three years, there's an issue coming up. You know, new students come in town, old students leave. At one time, there was an issue that students wanted to be on the city council. Well, that's city government is set by the state constitution, and you just obviously can't just change it, and you just can't make room for a student on the city government. It's just not allowed by the state constitution. If they want to have a representative come to a meeting, that's fine. You know, they open a meeting, no problem with that. I forget now what that demonstration was about. I had a silent demonstration one time. Come up and asked to be heard, which was because I think I was mayor at that time. We were glad to have them, but I don't know what the overall fuss was about. It's just those things come and go. I'm not trying to put it down, but I just don't remember now all the details.
What made you decide to get into local politics?
Well, Kathy, I grew up in Jacksonville, and I came back to town as a businessman. My father died in 1952. And I realized that time that in order for Jacksonville to move forward, certain things had to take place. We had to have certain things in town to support growth, certain structures in place. Well, I began to be active in some civic clubs and other places in the community. But I saw pretty quick that the source of power, change for the city government. So you need to get involved. In order to participate in that, you need to get involved in the government. You need to be an elected official. Well, things walked along, and I saw that as a need, so I began to be involved in local politics. I worked in the city council in 1960, and I ran again in 62, and I ran for mayor in 68. Those are the rest of history, but I feel like I need to do that in order to affect changes.
During your term of office, what were the major items?
Well, in the 60s, for example, Jacksonville did not have a hospital. There were very few doctors. So I wanted to do all I could to acquire a doctor for Jackson, a hospital for Jackson. We were not doing much in the way of growing economically. The town was sort of standstill. Our industrial prospects were sort of slim. Chamber of Commerce wasn't too active. We had the mill, we had the college, and that was frankly about all we had. I didn't see the town just the growth. So I got involved in the community. So I got involved in the city government, indicating that I wanted to kind of have a hospital. I worked for the hospital, worked for industrial prospects, and worked for economic growth in the community. And that's what I did. Became actively involved in those areas. And I think what we have is a result of that activity.